So this week we are doing monsters from 2000 whatever. I've got a new book coming out. It's called Hot Bologna. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's about anti-Semitic elephants and senior citizens that are trying to rule the world with oral sex. I don't know about this, man.
All right, you knuckleheads. Padded Room Podcast coming at ya. No, I can't do it, Darian.
crazy noises are coming out of my throat right now.
I can't do Darian. I just can't.
Dude, Darian hit you on the head.
Whatever. He's an asshole.
From the 2000s or whatever.
Yeah, so Cakewolf Happy Hour, we are doing the horror anthology Monsters for this 31 Days of Halloween extravaganza. Today we are covering 4 episodes rather than the normal 2 or 3 that we've been up to. Joining me today is Cake Bitch.
Hey!
I'm Cake Wolf.
And we're making up for lost time because we realized that our last episode we wanted to be all about the top 5s.
Yeah, so that's what we'll be doing. Today 4, tomorrow 4, and then I guess
our final wrap-up, Sayonara.
Sayonara. And then I'm probably going to take a little bit of a leave of absence, hiatus.
For a week.
Yeah, I'm probably going to take a little bit of a break and hit you guys back up mid-November. And then
you're going to take a two-week break.
And the, yeah, and then we're going to be doing a what you're thankful for episodes. So a couple of those. So we'll theme those out in due time and figure out how we're going to structure those.
Do you think we should smudge our apartment like with sage sticks?
For what?
As part of the thankfulness, like cleanse
the
energy.
Took a shit?
No, to cleanse the energy. You said you only got 2 tiny turds out. That's not that bad.
Yeah, I've been constipated.
Hello, poop. This is the poop happy hour.
Yeah.
Oh, we just bought Nolly a little emoji poop squeaky toy.
Yeah, we did.
It's very, very exciting.
She was, she wasn't humping that. She also has a zombie squirrel.
Yeah, she was really going to town on that.
Yeah, she was humping it.
Until I got the camera out, so.
Yeah.
I don't have any photographic proof of it happening.
That would be pretty great to get on camera. Though it's like an invasion of all, you know,
now,
privacy and moral
don't
dilemma
have
going on
privacy
there.
Privacy or morals. They're just dogs.
I guess, you know.
Although she seems to know when I get the camera out and she's being bad, she like stops being bad very quickly.
Yeah, I think when you are a creature that eats its own shit, then your morals and privacy are just like, null and void.
They're not existent.
Right.
Right.
So, we're going to be moving into our first episode of the evening. This is Leavings. This is episode 17 of season 3. And this one aired January 20th of 1991. And our director is John Tillinger. Our writer is Gahan Wilson. And this one's starring Clifton James, John Chris, Ken Costigan, and have you seen Monk?
I have not actually watched Monk. I have seen enough commercials because I used to have cable that I recognized.
Okay,
him.
Yeah.
Tony, it took me like 10 minutes into the episode to be like, wait, is that Monk?
Tony Shalhoub is his real name, and he is starring in this episode. He was also in Wings. That's where I first knew him from. But yeah, he stars in this.
He was in Wings?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and he also stars in this, so that's weird. We've seen some pretty decent actors that had early roles in the Monsters horror anthology, which I find interesting.
I didn't think this episode was all that good, though. Not for his acting.
Right, I mean, I feel like
I think it was more the storyline.
No, yeah, he did fine as an actor. It was just not too serviceable of a tale. So let's hit this one up. Cake Bitch is going to be covering the first two. I'll be covering the last two.
Yeah, and this one's probably going to be pretty short because I realize that my notes are pretty
Oh, sparse. Yeah, that's fine. If you just want to hit the cornerstone and then key points, we're good to go.
Okay, so...
This is a... We're doing four episodes here, so...
Yeah. Anyhow, this... Leavings, right?
Yeah.
That's what I have written down.
Yep.
This one is about two cops who come across this man in the subway who is missing... He's missing his arms. And they think this is weird, and they're trying to explain to their... chief or supervisor why they think it's so weird, because they're like, the skin's so smooth, like, don't you think this is odd? And he's just like, maybe he wasn't born with arms. And they're like, no, we just saw this man running down the street holding cantaloupes or something in his arms just yesterday.
Yeah,
and these look it like
was pineapples.
Pineapples. Okay.
Pineapples.
I just picked a random fruit out of the air and picked cantaloupes.
It's close enough.
And he definitely had arms, and the stubs are completely smooth, like they've been missing for years.
Right.
So, finally, the one cop gets the other cop to open up, and we find out that they've actually seen a creature in the subway that looks like a man that's composed of parts that don't match.
Yeah.
So he has, like, he's pieced together, he has different arms, different legs, different, like... chesticle areas.
Yeah, they describe him as a sort of patchwork man.
Yeah, he's like Frankenstein, but made of like a dozen different people.
Yeah.
So the chief puts them in a room by themselves, and they're getting kind of paranoid because the chief is treating them more like perpetrators than fellow cops. And finally the chief comes back and is like, all right, listen, this is the big league, so I need you to sign this confidentiality agreement. And, oh, yeah, you need to give me your weapons.
Right.
Before I take you any further.
Right, this there is a red alarm.
Flag.
Yeah. Code red right there.
Right. And the one cop is like, you want me to hand over my weapons? And he's like, yeah, you don't go any further than this. And so the guy eventually agrees, and they sign the confidentiality papers, and the chief makes a weird comment that I felt was worth writing down. He says, once a good cop, always a good cop.
Yeah.
So I guess he's just basically saying that he wants people he can boss around.
Yeah.
And that's what makes him a good cop.
Yeah.
So, anyways, once they sign these confidentiality papers and hand over their weapons, they're taken into this super-duper locked securely room. And they're looking around. There's different body parts floating in liquid. And
yeah, one of them is actually a severed head of a woman. And the
looks
police
like a
chief...
looks like a blow-up doll face.
Right, it does. The police chief says to the one police officer, which is like an Irishman, you can't blame her for trying to get a kiss out of you. She's been in there for several years, and you're probably the first dude that she's seen. So,
yeah. Like, the guy is like, Jesus, there's hands in here. They're moving. And the chief is like, probably because you bumped into him. And it's really, really bizarre.
At first, he's like...
blowing bubbles at him.
Yeah, at first, he's trying to do a little bit of a cover-up as to what they're witnessing, and then he just full-on goes into, well, yeah, these actually are alive, in a sense, and that's what it is. This is part of the secret that you're being...
exposed to.
You're coming into the fold of.
Can you handle it? Because if you can't handle it, we don't have a part for you to play.
Right.
Eventually, they get to the back of the room, and they find a creature, much like they saw in the subway, but he's dressed like a cop, and, I wrote down Franken-cop. Oh, no, you said Franken-cop. You called it a Franken-cop. And, they're like, what is this? And the Irish cop starts asking questions.
Yeah.
And that's when...
This whole time, too, the chief has been behind them.
Right. Just stalking, watching.
This is all wrong. Also, when they see this patchwork man, this Franken cop, basically what we got here is a dude that has one boob.
Yeah, he has a tit, and they show it, and I think they got away with it because it looked so fake.
Right, sure.
But, yeah, they've got a tit
but still,
on one side.
It's a tit on a television show that, like, ran
other.
On CBS.
And it's pretty ugly, and it looks like it's made of styrofoam.
I don't know how they got away with it, honestly, because, like, they can't show tits in cartoons, even, like, adult cartoons.
Well, I think there's a rule as to, like, there's different rules for very late night shows, so if this was on later at night, they can get away with more.
It was actually on in the mornings.
It's on in the mornings?
When I was watching it.
You weren't watching tapes?
I was watching it in the mornings. It ran, like, when on days that I had skipped school, it was on, like, I don't know, maybe 8 o'clock.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't show this episode in syndication.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. It's kind of strange.
Anyhow, so the chief gets to the end, and they start asking, well, the Irish cop starts asking questions, and the chief goes, well, I guess you're only good for parts, and Frankencop fires, and we are left, I guess, assuming that the two cops are dead.
Yeah, and Frankencop's laughing. Yeah. That's we do a zoom in on his face, and yeah.
Yeah, that's the end of the episode. It's not complicated, and I mean, I guess it wouldn't need to be complicated, but it's just not a strong story.
It's not. It's really not.
And like, what cop would be like, oh, sure, I'll sign this confidentiality agreement.
I think.
And give you my gun, and then follow you into a locked room.
Like, I think the chief is supposed to be kind of like Frankenstein, in a sense. They don't establish anything other than he's making Franken-cops. They don't say why or anything about it. He's just doing it. Yeah. And, like, he's got this giant vault in the police station that leads to this lab full of severed body parts, and he's getting them in there somehow. Like, I mean,
right? And like, I don't know. I guess because it's like top secret, he mentions like the FBI and stuff. So I guess we're supposed to believe that the government's in on this too.
Yeah, the government is all for making these reanimated corpse hodgepodge monster things for whatever reason. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
That really is never established.
Like, no.
What the purpose of them is.
No.
Because, well, they can't ask questions or they just become parts.
Yeah. Now, I've already mentioned a movie called Dead Heat that was basically about cops that are undead. But another one that I'm going to throw at you guys is from 1965. This one's called Frankenstein Conquers the World. And this happens during World War II, during a bombing of Hiroshima. Radiation changes Dr. Frankenstein's heart that is kept inside of a Japanese lab. The heart gets really big, and then it sprouts arms and legs and a head. And it grows to exasperated size and becomes a giant Frankenstein monster that later in the movie fights what is supposed to be like a Godzilla ripoff. It's basically a giant lizard. So, yeah, it's ridiculous. It's a kaiju movie. And
your favorite.
Sure. Yeah, why not? Sure. Check it out.
It's probably better than this episode.
I liked it. I thought it was a fun movie. There's also a soft sequel to it, I suppose you could say. War of the Gargantuans, because it comes after this movie was released, and they use the same Frankenstein monster in it. Okay. I don't remember that one too well, so that one might have, like, a different story
so
to it. But I remember the monsters were the same, at least. So, yeah, if you're into Godzilla, old-style Godzilla kaiju stuff, and you want to see a massive Frankenstein that towers over skyscrapers, check out Frankenstein Conquers the World, 1965. You can find this one on YouTube for free. You can also get a DVD for it. They're a little bit rare, and they're currently going for around $30. They do have them on Amazon if you want
to
check that out. Yeah, but, you know, for a DVD, $30 can be a little bit of a killer. Anyway, moving on to our ratings of the monster itself. I don't know.
I was not impressed with this monster.
I think if this was, like, put into play, Darian Brock would sign up for it. I know he said several times on his show, the Padded Room Podcast, that he wants a black man's penis. So he would... Yeah, so he would get that, I suppose. Maybe he would get a couple of them.
Shoot, didn't... Did I ever write that Fright site about the penis transplants?
Why don't you tell the folks about it?
Because well, you did not write it. I do not remember much about it anymore, but apparently...
He was a collector.
Oh, no. No, this is the actual penis transplants, not the guy who just collected penises.
Well, let's talk about the one who collected them first, because I like that
story.
Yeah,
there was some guy busted. I think it was in Texas or Florida. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking it was Texas, though. I think they might have had this nut job.
Yeah.
But he was taking penises off of corpses and embalming them and, like, keeping them in his own personal collection.
Yeah.
That's all I remember about that story.
If I remember right, he had over 1,000 of them.
Oh, yeah. It was, like, at hundreds and hundreds of penises.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Embalmed penises.
I thought you were talking about the penis transplant story.
Okay, tell us about this.
The penis this is a real thing. Apparently they have transplanted penises onto people. Usually they get penis transplants after their circumcision is botched in Africa.
Uh-huh.
But apparently how I found out about it was one of my coworkers was telling me that some guy got his penis transplant tattooed to match the rest of his body, because he was a black man, and I think the transplant was a white penis.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that would hurt.
Insurance.
Did he get that done before it was put on to him, or?
I don't know if you can, I guess you could tattoo a dead
severed penis.
But, yeah. I mean, you'd have to keep it at a certain temperature. They couldn't transplant
that's
it.
That's true.
Like,
I mean,
there's a very small period of window of time that you could get a transplant. But I don't know how the nerve endings exactly work. I don't know if they can attach all the nerve endings, or if it's just like you can now pee through your penis.
Can you imagine how intense that would be to get an entire like color all around your penis?
Oh, like tattooed to match the rest of your skin. That would be a
lot. That is intense.
But anyways,
that's dedication.
I think it was covered by insurance.
Wow,
the tattoo.
That's some good insurance.
That is amazing insurance.
That's just, I don't
but
know.
But botched, I mean, that would have to be a super botched circumcision. Like, somebody flinched.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that happens too. Penis transplants.
Yeah, okay. So, I guess...
I mean, the people are always so happy about it too at the end, because now they look like a full man.
Mm-hmm.
So... There you go.
So, Blue Cross Blue Penis?
Blue Cross Blue Penis. Best insurance.
Black and Blue Penis, I suppose. Yeah, wow. That would not be my day that I would call fun. That would not be my fun day.
No.
Yeah, there was a penis transplant story that I heard years ago of a Russian dude that actually had his penis surgically removed and then put onto his shoulder because they were able to promote like exponential growth for this penis. It was like a micro penis that ended up becoming a 13-inch penis.
That's weird.
That they were able to have
from the blood flow or something.
Yeah, they were able to have like promote growth for it by putting it onto his shoulder.
Can you imagine trying to hide
and then putting it back onto his
your penis
groin
on your arm? Like, how would you go to work?
Shoulder pads, I guess.
You
like
strap it down.
Those...
Is it erect from the blood flow, or is it flaccid while it's on your shoulder?
I would imagine. Yeah, that's a good question. Well, either way, I think you got to go with those 1980s power suits because they had the like the heavy
the
shoulder
extra
pads.
Huge. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you just, I don't know, act like a supervillain from the Darkwing
that
Duck cartoon show.
That seems like kind of a risk to take. I mean, like literally, how part of that whole concoction down there is a lot of nerve endings too. So like, how do you reattach the nerve endings? Like, is that possible? If there's any doctors out there that specialize in penis surgeries, please let us know.
Sure. Right.
I would be incredibly impressed if we had a penis transplant surgeon listening to us right now.
Yeah, me too. You can write into kingcakewolf@gmail.com. If you are, let us know all about your penis ways.
Yeah, I want to know how it works after the surgery.
Moving on to our next episode, we've got, well, I guess we need to rate the monster in the...
Oh, yeah. That's right.
So,
well, in the episode, I guess. Yeah.
The monster, I'm going to give a 1.5. There was a boob. I guess.
I mean, that, I'm gonna gonna give it a one because it was really. It looked like it was made of that floral styrofoam.
Uh-huh.
Like they just carved it very delicately, and then spray painted it.
Yeah.
And then slapped it on a person. So yeah, it didn't look too hot. It was not good.
And the episode itself was pretty boring. I'd say it would deserve no more than a 1.5. Really.
Yeah, I'll stick with that. Because the acting I was going to be generous and give it a 2, but, I mean, the story is just really lacking.
It is. Can't really see it as a movie and don't want to. I think this is one that, if you're going to redo it, you're going to have to do it in such a way that we actually see the characters come across this patchwork man, running away with body parts. They have a little bit of an altercation with them. You do stuff like that, and you cut down on the excessive dialogue, then you can have their ending that they did, and I feel like that would have been fine.
But do you think they would just, have handed
like the other
over
Monsters episodes, far too much dialogue, and no real substance in action or anything.
Do you think if they had seen the Franken monster running away with the body parts, that they would have signed over their guns and everything? You think they would have been able to write that into the storyline? Because I wouldn't. I wouldn't give up my weapon if I thought we were going to go see this Franken monster.
Well, I think if you frame it in a certain way where they are going into a top secret area that it contains volatile substances, and just for safety reasons, they've got to, like, you know, maybe put on suits and then take off their shit.
Maybe.
Like, then you can... Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, there's ways around it. But moving on to our next episode, we're covering episode 18 of season 3. This one's called Desirable Alien. And I think this one's going to be one of Cake Bitch's favorites.
I don't know about that.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it was a little extra sexist.
Okay.
But this one was, like, worlds better than Leavings. Like, I can't even remember that episode's title.
So this one aired January 27th of 1991. For our actors, this is weird. Our director is Bette Gordon. Our writer is Edith Swenson.
Edith Swenson again.
Mm-hmm. And we've got Louis Guzman. And we've got...
He's the only one I recognized.
Tony Spiridakis and Wendy McKenna. Those are our actors for this one. So there you go. And I will let you take this one away, I suppose.
All right. So Desirable Alien is about a gentleman who is in America. He's trying to become a U.S. citizen, but for some reason, he is terrified of taking the physical exam to prove that he is healthy and in good fitness in order to become a citizen. So right. His previous immigration agent, we find out, is pregnant, and it is implied that she is pregnant with his child.
Mm-hmm.
And a new hot agent has been assigned to him in a tiny little skirt.
Yeah, her skirt is far too short for her to be taken seriously as
an
immigration's agent.
I have a feeling they have a dress code and that the skirts are not supposed to be more than an inch above the knee. Just my guess, based on my previous corporate life.
You could basically see the bottom of her vagina.
It was really short.
Yeah.
Really, really short. So she walks in and she's just having none of this. He's trying to sweet talk her and seduce her. And, I mean, he's looking up her legs and, like, he likes what he sees.
Yeah.
He's trying to get with her. And she is trying to be professional despite her very short mini skirt. she took a look at his ass, though.
Yeah.
She liked what she saw there, but she resists his advances.
And she's having trouble doing it, too.
Right. She doesn't understand so much. I was so hoping that they were going to expose her at the end as a lesbian, and that's why his advances didn't work. I was very disappointed that that's not where this was going.
But he's definitely got some kind of magical charm over these people, basically.
Yeah, he's got some sort of
also worth taking note of, this place is called Mount Olympus, and it's littered with Greek mythology paintings.
Yes.
And the opening of the episode actually focuses on the god Bacchus, which is the god of wine.
Debauchery.
Yeah, debauchery.
Partying. Sex. Anyhow, so she leaves. Well, he asks her, do you hate me or are you hiding your heart from me?
Yeah.
And it's just really cheesy. She leaves and his kitchen help goes, what's wrong? And he's like, why won't you just take this physical and be done with it? Like, everything else is done. Like, all he needs to do is pass this physical. And he says, nothing, it's just a birth defect. Hey, I need a favor from you. And I'm not they didn't establish what the favor was, did they?
No, but it's assumed that the favor is meant to be, if the person coming to give him a physical is a man, then his boy, the cook that works for him, is supposed to
pretend to be him.
Work instead, right?
Got it. Because I was confused then. Because when the doctor shows up, she is a hot lady.
Mm-hmm.
And the kitchen help is like, well, who are you here for? She's like, Hercules.
And, yeah, dude's name is Hercules.
This is when Hercules comes out of the back room and takes over, because he doesn't want his kitchen help getting lucky.
Right.
Apparently.
Heaven forbid.
So, the new caseworker that he was assigned, the girl in the miniskirt, finds out that they're sending this lady doctor. And she immediately leaves, because she knows that this is no good. Something's going down, something's very suspicious, and people are getting pregnant from it.
Right.
But this doctor, she goes back into the room with him. She like immediately starts seducing him.
Yeah.
And they go back into the back room, and he's like on top of her. She's half undressed, her black bra is showing. He's playing with her stethoscope, and she's like, lower, take it lower. And they're all but having sex.
Right.
When the caseworker barges in and is like, what the hell's going on? And he's like, relax, have a glass of wine, join us. And she slaps him. And
yeah, he says wine, but they're actually drinking a Greek liqueur called Ouzo.
Ouzo?
I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Ouzo?
Ouzo, maybe? Yeah,
it's...
It's not Greek wine, though.
No.
It's like actual liquor.
We used it for a cocktail we made for the movie Terrorvision. You can check out cakewolf.com. Right. Yeah.
So you can buy it at the state store?
It's a margarita sort of...
Thing,
yeah. You can buy it at the state store.
Because we live in Pennsylvania, and we have to buy our liquor from the state liquor store.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, he says, don't try to fight me. Don't try to fight your heart. And instead of succumbing to his wishes, she reports the doctor to various authorities, and he basically sues the immigration office.
Yeah.
So the caseworker's boss is like, you need to do something to get this case dropped.
Right.
Basically, like, even though she's saying this guy is swarmy, he is having sex with the case, with the agents, like, you need to look into this. Everyone's just like, get this case dropped and just grant this guy his citizenship.
Yeah.
Just get his physical done. So she has an idea. She's going to go back to him and try to seduce him.
Yeah, she's trying to out-sex him.
Yeah.
So she's wearing basically fuck me get up.
She's basically wearing what she wears to work, but maybe like less sleeves. And she gets to Mount Olympus and she's seducing him. And he's fallen for it. He's fallen for it hook, line, and sinker. And she's like, just tell me, why won't you have the physical? And he's like, well, I have a birth defect. Well, it's not a defect. And she taunts
in so much
him.
That it drives the women absolutely crazy.
Right. And she says, well, I can resist your ways because you're used goods. Like, what's in it for me?
Yeah.
There's no mystery here. And he gets angry and says, you want to play hard to get? Well, resist this. And then he opens his pants. And yeah. We are left to assume that he drops his trousers.
Right.
She goes back to work and files paperwork to deport him.
Right.
And so things are not going his way.
Yeah.
So he gets the letter that he's being deported, and his kitchen help and him both come to the conclusion that she must be a demon.
Right.
Like, there's no other explanation. This lady's just a demon.
There's no woman out there that would not want to fuck this guy, right, apparently. Right. So anyone that can resist him must be otherworldly.
So up to this point, I'm thinking she is a fucking lesbian. This is amazing. What a heady time the early 90s were.
Yeah.
Well, it's not. It's not so. She goes back to work, and the guy's like, you can't deport him. Like, what is wrong with him? There's, like, deformities are not a reason to deport somebody. And she says, this deformity is, and she explains that his feet are like hooves.
Yeah, it's not a giant whale penis.
No. Well, if he's part horse, yeah. It probably is pretty large. She says his feet are like hooves, his legs are hairy, he even has a tail, and when he's aroused, horns grow out of his head. He's a satyr.
Right.
And, her boss thinks she's insane, off her rocker, so she goes back to Mount Olympus, dressed like a ninja.
Yep.
Like, ready to take him down.
She even has some kind of Japanese writing all over her outfit.
Yeah, it probably says skanky whore or something. there's characters across her headband. She has a yin-yang on her vest.
She recently hooked up with...
Probably offensive.
She recently hooked up with Shredder in the... This is basically what happened. She visited the Technodrome. Her and Shredder had a good time. They hit it off, and she became one of his foot soldiers, so she put on the garb and went to kick some satyr butt.
Right, like, it's really out of place. I don't know why they threw that in. Like, now there's way too many nationalities involved here, and she is not Japanese, so it's not working for her. At least the help is Hispanic and sounds Hispanic, and the Greek guy is Greek and sounds Greek. Here's this white lady rolling in her Japanese headband.
Culturally it's confused.
Very weird. So she walks in there and she's gonna kill him. And so he's gonna kill her. And then instead, they have sex.
Yep.
And so she's like, well, I can't stop the deportation because you don't deserve to be a citizen this way. But I have another idea. You could take a different oath instead. And so, basically, they get married. And that's how the episode ends.
Yep. So, it ends with him looking like he's not too sure about this deal. And she looks happy as a pig in shit. Like, she's made out.
Yeah.
She's trapped the sex god. Yeah. And
I don't know how she thinks that's going to work out, though. I mean, he doesn't seem to have any...
Right.
Like, qualms. Well,
yeah.
About
sharing.
Just having sex with everyone. So, I mean, he's probably Dionysus or Bacchus.
Right. Basically. So probably not going to work out for her. Monster in this one, I'm going to give a 3. I thought it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I liked his whole setup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a nice style. They put a lot of fur on his chest that, got thicker as it goes down to the groin area, meeting with some hooves down there.
We didn't get to see whether he had a horse dick.
No, the horns looked really good, and his face contorted a bit to look more like
animal-like.
A mix between an animal and a human.
Yeah.
They did a great job on this. Most of the monsters generally in this show, they do look very good.
Yeah, most of them are pretty decent. I'm going to give it a 3.5. I thought it was pretty good.
Okay.
And I mean, I kind of have a soft spot for Dionysus.
Yeah.
those half animal, half human creatures of the mythologies. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I liked the monster.
Yeah, the episode itself, I'm probably going to give a, give it a 2.5. I think it was a fun one. It's not one of the strongest episodes, but it's something you can watch. I feel like where it suffers is basically, just not enough humor, and that's what was carrying this episode. There were too many moments of just awkward dialogue going on, as per usual.
I think I'd probably give it... I'd give it a 2. I'm gonna give it a 2. Like, I didn't hate it.
Right.
It was definitely not the... No, I'll give it a 2.5, too. It was definitely not the worst episode. It wasn't even close to being the worst episode. But it was very mediocre. But on the enjoyable side, if you can get over the, like, disgusting sexism of it all, I feel like they really missed their chance, though, of, like, making her a lesbian, and that's why she's just not even interested in him.
Right,
like,
so if you're going to change like this...
The very obvious thing.
If you're going to change this in any way, that's what...
Right, I would make her a lesbian. I would make it that she's actually able to resist him because she's not interested in his...
I think that would be a good change, and I agree with you there. I feel like that would also aid to adding a lot more comedy to it.
Yeah, but then again, also, I mean, a woman can just not be interested in a man.
She could just be frigid.
She could just not be interested. He's, like, super swarmy. I wouldn't be interested.
Well, it's a supernatural attraction.
It's supposed to be, but maybe she's just, like, you know, she just doesn't give two shits.
Jenna Jameson... was unable to stop herself from straddling a satyr and riding him all the way into the forest. There's a movie called Satyr, 1998, porno, basically. And this one does star Jenna Jameson. You can find this one if you're searching on Google, going to videos, and looking for porn. It's full-on close-up satyr fucking Jenna Jameson and other women.
I didn't
penetration.
Realize that the people filming these things were so bad at focusing. That was a really long, blurry ass and penis.
It's also
took a long time for them to focus on.
It's also like a direct to you know, like VHS, maybe like limited release kind of thing. Like it's not easy to find.
Yeah, let's
is
just,
what I'm saying.
She turns into...
This wasn't a very popular one, I think.
Right.
So...
Well,
but it's basically got a satyr fucking women and turning them into satyrs throughout it. So you guys can watch that.
Kate Bitch
watched a little bit of it with me.
Her legs look like mine do in the middle of winter towards the end of her transformation.
That's an exaggeration.
Long flowing tresses on her calves. But I mean, her lady parts are still nice and
the
hair-free.
Satyr itself in that looked
and
all
her,
right.
And her thigh was still hair free. It was just from the knees down, which is opposite of how most women handle their leg hair during the winter. Usually, it's like I got to shave up to my knee, but everything else can stay.
Well,
so
they got to keep the women good looking. You can have the monstrous looking satyr, which they did for that film, but the women still have to look very attractive.
She couldn't have hair on her.
That was fine, but the hair on like the chest area and stuff, that's where most men are looking. Like,
oh, well, the guy didn't have hair on his chest, really.
It led up and stuff. Like, he was furry.
Oh, he was furry?
Yeah, and he also had a really big beard.
Yeah,
horns.
I was focused more on the fact that for, like, a good 30 seconds, all you could see was blurry, like, doggy-style penis and vagina action. I don't know. I kind of thought that the higher-end production porn had better quality than what you find on Pornhub, but no. That is not the case.
So, what would you I don't know. Never mind. Let's move on to the next episode.
Oh, do you mean for other media?
Oh.
Because I was talking about that
sure, if
what
you want.
Was the episode from Star Trek that I was talking about? Who mourns for how do you say it? Adonis?
Okay.
I want to say orthodontist every time I say that. But anyways, this episode is on Star Trek. It is in, well, it's number 31. It's in the second season. And it's episode 2 of season 2.
It's of the first Star Trek.
The original Star Trek, the only one that's worth watching.
Is I disagree. I disagree with that heavily.
Okay. I haven't actually watched any of the other ones. The original just has a special place in my heart. But their team lands on a planet and they're being held captive by an alien claiming to be the Greek god Apollo. So that's the long and short of it.
Cool.
So that's your other media from me.
Okay. Moving on to our next episode, we've got season 3, episode 19, A Face for Radio. This one aired February 3rd of 1981, and our director here is Bruce Feirstein, and our writer, again, Bruce Feirstein. And our actors are Morton Downey Jr., another one of the Downey Juniors.
He does have a face for radio.
Laura Branigan and Lori Krebs. So this one basically starts off with a dude named Ray Bright. He's got a very ugly face. He's balding on the top and pulls his long hair back into a ponytail. And very creepy smile.
He
likes to do the smile a lot and smoke a bunch of cigarettes while...
Essentially, he's Howard Stern.
No, Howard Stern is cool and, like,
Is he?
He's cool. He is suave. No. He is witty.
Getting
this
none of
guy
those from
is
Stern.
None of those things. This guy is just disgusting. And
he's a shock jock. I mean...
Essentially, he's kicking it off in this episode, interviewing a woman that says she's a psychic and has precognitive experiences. And one of her She has a premonition that something is going to happen to Ray. And she's on the show to warn him. He has her on the show not to listen to this, but instead to poke fun at one of her books that she wrote and essentially make fun of her.
Yeah.
And he does it for ratings. She's not there to promote the book. She keeps saying, like, I don't care how bad you make fun of me. I'm here to help you. I want to help you. He doesn't want to listen. And when she finally gets out a little bit of that, you know, he needs to watch out. He needs to go home and just relax because something awful is going to happen tonight. He doesn't listen to her. He's like, whatever, you know, just go home. You're dumb.
Yeah, I have a show to continue.
Yeah. So he's in a radio studio. And watching him from behind the separating glass is a woman that works with him. She's his producer. She's also his girlfriend. So she's given some pretty ugly looks to him as this woman named Amanda comes into the studio. She is the next guest. And Ray looks at her up and down, so obvious and, like, drooling about it.
Yeah.
That his girlfriend's totally skeeved. And Ray doesn't care. He's just a perv. So he goes up to this woman. He starts hitting on her right away. And they have a discussion on air about how she was abducted by aliens. And this happened because she was on the beach drinking some wine. When the next thing she knows, there's an alien standing over top of her. They take her into a spacecraft where they spread her legs.
Well,
and hold down her arms.
They made it sound
and take turns probing her.
The alien was initially fucking her on the beach, and then they rose into the spaceship.
Okay.
And then they probed her.
They took turns probing her.
They took turns probing her.
Okay.
So
I missed the fucking on the beach thing.
It sounded that way. She said, and then I was naked, and then he was on top of me.
Gotcha.
So I feel like they imply that the sex happened, but they didn't come out and, like, say it.
But Ray is drooling at the thought of this, and he's just sort of like, you know, whatever, baby, just keep talking about this sex. Whatever, babe,
you're damaged goods, and I want some.
Yeah, yeah. So keep talking about how you were basically raped by aliens, because this is getting me randy. And so she wants to show him what's in a box that she is carrying with her. And he says, I would love to see what's in your box. And this is not the first or the last time that he throws out a disgusting remark like that. Basically, after some deliberation, he does check out what is in the box. And it looks like a weird creature.
Yeah, it's like a skinned cat.
Yeah. Before he does look in the box, he tells her that he will look in the box. But first she has to make out with him. And this is when his girlfriend...
Oh, right. She just says, fuck this shit.
Yeah, this is when his girlfriend leaves because he's basically being an asshole. And so he looks in the box. He sees this thing that kind of looks like, what'd you call it? A
skinned cat. And it has two different colored eyes.
Yeah, kind of like a skinned cat in a way, but it's got humanoid aspects to it. It also has a really long tail and like 4 to 5 arms. Depending on what angle you're checking it out at. It's kind of weird looking. It's not very good looking, though. It kind of resembles... what would you relate that to? Like, I'm thinking one of the Muppets, like a Fraggle that you...
Yeah, like maybe a cast off. And they kind of...
It doesn't look very good.
They kind of poke fun at that, too, because he claims that his, like, 13-year-old daughter could make a better puppet.
Yeah.
So, like, who put you up to this, lady?
So, she's given him a couple of lines of bullshit here about how in this place that she went to, she has found out that they live a very peaceful life because they have found a way to coexist with one another and, unlike humans, work as a whole to better their race. And it's a lot of unnecessary delivery, but during this discussion, we've got the puppet monster thing telling Ray that it's a trap, he needs to get away immediately, this woman is actually the alien herself, and he's just a poor fuck that got fooled by her charms.
Just a poor boy.
Yeah, nobody loves him. I wouldn't love him. He's ugly. But he doesn't listen, and she says, so to feed this thing, which I want to do right now, I have to have a willing person that's going to subject themselves to basically melding with it. And Ray thinks that she's full of shit, and he's like, I will consent to allow this thing to eat me so that... You know, you can get your jollies off or whatever you're doing here. And once you realize that you're crazy and it didn't actually devour me, then we're going to go back to my place and fuck.
Yeah.
And gross. She's like, okay, well, it's going to happen, but I'll agree to your terms. And he says, all right, folks, I'm going to go off air here because I'm about to go and get laid. Like, this is the worst show ever.
I mean, honestly, how is Howard Stern any better than this? I mean, it's just sex jokes the whole time, and they're not that funny, and they're really disgusting.
I think Howard Stern...
He's just really gross.
No, Howard...
That's what he does.
Howard Stern was a...
That's why he's had Donald Trump on many times.
He was a very smart dude.
Yeah, as in he knew exactly how to get that money.
I think Howard Stern is a great act. I like him. Fart Man. He coined Fart Man. Come on.
You're not really building up the he's witty part.
Well, this isn't Fart a Howard Man. This isn't a Howard Stern podcast. Like, what do you want from me?
You said he was witty.
Well, he is.
And then you said he coined Fart Man.
Fart Man's hilarious.
I don't know.
Fart Man went to the desert and farted? put his ass against all of the caves and farted out Saddam Hussein. Like, It was funny stuff. He had a little gag running for a while.
So it's like a lowbrow South Park.
Sure.
Okay.
He would do it on air. It was just a... It was a short-running gag. But he had a lot of insight on things that I found to be interesting. He didn't just talk about sex all the time.
Seems like that was his bread and butter.
Well, sure.
Anyway.
I mean, that's what people want to hear.
Anyway, so this guy volunteers his tribute on the show Monsters, and he gets eaten.
So he does get eaten, and then we transition to her going to another radio jockey, and basically this is like a country radio station. She's dressed like a country gal at this point, whereas prior to this she was dressed like a secretary in a sense. So now she opens the box, and we've got Ray's voice screaming out of this monster, "Run away, it's a trap, she's an alien, help, run away."
All right, before the monster eats him, he does go, "You fool! You fool! You fool!"
Yep.
Yeah.
So, I guess the lesson of this one is, if you are going to have an opportunity to have sex with someone right after meeting them, but under the guise that you're going to have to be eaten by a monster, maybe just go home and watch the movie Seder from 1998.
That is a better option. they kind of leave it. The next radio host doesn't seem nearly as skeevy. He seems more like just a conspiracy theorist.
Right.
So, I don't know. I wonder if she changes her mode of attack in order to get people to volunteer to be eaten.
Yeah, probably. I didn't really care for this one too much. I think the monster is pretty poor looking as well. Going to give it a 1.5. Give it a 1.5. Give the episode a 1.5 as well.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah. I liked some of the talks about her getting fucked by aliens, but other than that, like, it wasn't doing too much for me.
You didn't catch that she was being fucked. You thought she was just being probed.
Well, probed over and over again. And now I know that she was apparently fucked. But the probed over and over again is enough to give me a 1.5.
I'll give you that extra half point.
Yeah, it's something to, like, think about during the rest of the episode.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, it wasn't the worst, but it was really, 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 really not even mediocre. It wasn't good.
Yeah, I don't think that this one... I think that if you want to keep it in the line of some of the other episodes of Monsters and have excessive dialogue for it, then actually get a good writer that's going to tell some weird sex stories of her and these aliens. Make it a little bit more compelling. That's something I would have changed for this one. I don't think it could work as a movie, and yeah.
No, there weren't weird sex things. Oh, so Kimmy Schmidt. I'm going to say Kimmy Schmidt.
Oh, as a recommendation?
Alien probings, yeah.
Why?
Because it was kind of like she was being held captive, and there were weird sex things in the bunker. And
well, why don't you tell them why she's held captive, I guess, since you brought it up.
Kimmy Schmidt?
Yeah, I don't know.
She was just kidnapped by this crazy religious fanatic who thought he was a pastor. And he was keeping three women in... Was it three women or four women?
It was three.
It was three?
Yep.
Okay, so three women in a bunker, and having them do his bidding. Like, they would turn a wheel in order to make electricity for him or something like that.
Yeah, and there was weird sex things that happened.
There were weird sex things in the bunker.
Yep. And then eventually he was exposed, the women were released.
Yeah, and Kimmy Schmidt tries to have a normal life, but she's been out of normal society for so long, she has to relearn it.
Well, she went in there when she was, like, a child.
Yeah,
right?
Well, I mean, not, like, a baby child, but, like, probably
13.
Well, when do you go out riding bike on your own? Yeah. Probably around that age, 10 to 13.
So creepy. And she's sort of out of touch with the world, so she has a very childlike mentality with everything. It's weird that show is hitting home with a lot of, like, a young demographic.
Yeah, apparently children really like it, and it's because all of the weird sex jokes go over kids' heads.
Yeah.
It's just so colorful, and adults are acting so weird that I think kids are just eating it up.
All right.
So
my recommendation is the Paranormal Podcast. If you go to jimharold.com, that's J-I-M-H-A-R-O-L-D, jimharold.com for the Paranormal Podcast. It's a fun podcast. This guy is basically what you want for a radio host that's going to be covering people that had supernatural experiences or encountered the extraterrestrials or et cetera.
Did we basically talk about him before? Like you and me?
Right, off of the show we have. You introduced me to it, actually. Okay. And I've been listening to it. It's very good stuff. You get a lot of free episodes on his website that I plugged for you guys. You can also, for a small fee, join his little program that he's got running and have access to thousands of episodes. They're really, really good, and this guy does it for a living. He has a great insight on the paranormal, and he's basically interviewing people that had experiences. Maybe they died and got to see a glimpse of the afterlife, or were abducted by aliens, or met Bigfoot, etc. And he's not judging them. He's not pretending like he knows something that they don't and treating them like they're crazy. He takes everything with a grain of salt. He is a believer, and he is giving these people respect that they probably don't normally get, and giving them a chance to share their story with us as listeners. And it's very interesting to hear these people talk unhindered from any of those,
judgmental tendencies.
Right.
I haven't gotten the chance to listen to it yet. It sounded like a really cool podcast, so I'm glad that
There's this one dude. He's a super old dude. He was in Vietnam. He was littered with bullets, and it's so bad. Like, he has a voice box. He's all fucked up from this war. He had a near-death experience, and he gets on the show talking on this voice box, obviously, because he can't talk on his own accord, and discussing what he had seen in the afterlife. And his explanation of it is so bizarre. And he has other people that he has met throughout his life that have had similar experiences that he has. So he feels like it's not just a coincidence, you know. But it's interesting. Definitely check that out. He has a discussion in the afterlife, I believe, with Archimedes, I think is who he had a discussion with. I don't know. The really fun stuff. And they cover Roswell, a lot of things that have conspiracy theories behind them. Everything you could want. There's even some chances that you can get throughout the year where he will actually have a fortune teller on. And if you're a listener to him, you can write in and actually have the fortune teller. There's a chance that you could be picked to have the fortune teller tell your fortune for you. Yeah,
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, she seemed really interesting. She has her own site too, and I can't remember what that is offhand.
Now, is it like a tarot card reading, or does she like?
She's like an astrologist.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So she can do she does a couple of different things.
Cool.
But yeah, jimharold.com, Paranormal Podcast, great show. Definitely check that out. Moving on to our next episode, we got episode 20 of season 3. This one aired February 10th of 1991. Oh my god.
Pizza.
Yeah, this pizza we had, olives and pepperoni do not go together.
Yeah, like my throat was making the weirdest noise at the beginning of the show. It wasn't a burp, it was like just air.
That's exactly what's happening to me.
It was really bizarre.
So, the director of this episode is Thomas J. Wellen. Our writer is Ron Goulart. And it stars Richard Belzer, Dave Leary, Geraldine Lear, and Shelley Berman. This one is titled Werewolf of London. Or, I'm sorry.
Werewolves London.
Werewolves London. Yeah. I guess it was Werewolves of Thunder, wasn't it?
It's Werewolves of London.
Yeah, okay.
I think so.
Well, this one's called Werewolves. Werewolf.
The only part I know is the ah-ooh part, really.
Okay. the plural, not plural, singular. Jesus.
Werewolf.
Werewolf of Hollywood. I can read.
Yeah, I can read words. Howard Stern is witty.
I hate you. It's the reason I call you cake bitch. I'm not the only one that enjoys Howard Stern.
No, I know you're not the only one. I just don't understand it.
What about that movie, like, Private Parts? Have you seen that?
I didn't want to. Like, I don't get any of this suave. Like, he is the opposite of suave to me. He is so incredibly swarmy and disgusting that, like, I don't even want to be in the same room as a movie of his. Like,
that's terrible.
It's, ugh.
You're ridiculous. Werewolf of Hollywood. This one I'm not going to spend too much time talking about. I'm going to glaze over almost the entire episode. Basically, what we have here is a screenwriter who's writing for a Hollywood executive that wants to get his big-time movie out. And this big-time movie that is coming out has to be kept somewhat of a secret. We have a woman that visits this screenwriter who's having trouble writing this strange movie. And she's there to give him a hand. She was sent in by the dude that's hiring him to do it. Yeah. And she's basically a biker chick. She's wearing all kinds of leather. And this writer dude kind of looks like a nerdo. He apparently is an established writer in Hollywood because he's got a Silver Pen Award for his writing talents that he's kept for quite a few years, and yeah, I don't know. That's coming into play later, you know, because the episode is called Werewolf of Hollywood, and they make a point to show that this guy has a trophy made of fucking silver.
Right, they make sure that it's in his trash can when he walks in.
So,
and he is upset because it is missing.
Yeah. They have a lot of unnecessary dialogue. She ends up writing with him. They're visited by the dude that wants this movie made. There's more dialogue, and they have a discussion about how this dude who wants to get this movie made is probably not going to last very long in Hollywood because he just got a bonus, and when you get a bonus, that's bad. That's like a portent of bad.
Yeah, is that a thing in Hollywood? If you get more money, it's a bad sign. Like,
but yeah, so he thinks he's gonna get canned. So he wants to make this movie come out ASAP, and the writer is basically not enjoying this movie because he feels as though it's uninspired. He has to follow these very strict guidelines, and kind of put filler in between. And the guidelines that he has, he doesn't like, basically because they have a lack of creativity. He's like, look at all these newspapers I got here, honey. This is all stuff that is in the script. Like, dude's losing his mind, he has no more creativity in his body, and he starts listing off all of these murders that are happening in the area, and they're all the same murders that are being written into the script. And they're all animal attacks, and you obviously see what's happening. Werewolf is killing people in Hollywood. Well, there's a bunch of stupid stuff that happens that's relating to nothing but, you know, people talking to each other for large amounts of time.
Yeah, the biker about, chick doesn't seem to really know why she's there or what her role is.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a werewolf attack outside. They see glimpses of it happening. They go out to investigate, and they see a werewolf. They see a dead body. They both try to find out who the werewolf is. They determine this by finding a piece of the werewolf's clothing that was left behind at the murder scene, and using it to determine that it's some dude that they didn't establish prior to in this episode?
No. know. He's the producer.
Yeah, but this is the first time that we, like, see the producer.
Oh, I thought the producer was in there to hand that guy his bonus check.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, he's there.
He was the one that gave him the bonus check. So that dude, okay. I thought it, well, that makes it a little bit better, but not by much.
Yeah.
No, still getting a one for me. anyway. It wasn't
quite as disjointed as you thought.
Right. So that ends up being your werewolf. They approach him, and the writer has a gun with him that is filled with silver bullets.
Well,
that was
supposed to be.
Right. They're supposed to be silver bullets from a
biker chick.
From the biker chick who took it from the set of, what was it, Silverado?
To be like
the,
some prop from one of the movies.
Yeah, they try to say what the movie was, like the Killer Silverado or some stupid shit.
This one was boring.
But, yeah, so he goes to approach the werewolf. They're trying to be funny because the werewolf's trying to basically give him more money to keep the secret and let him do his thing. And the dude's like, I will keep the secret if you let me direct. And this pisses off the werewolf because he doesn't like that everybody in Hollywood wants to direct. And for some reason, that's supposed to be funny because it's delivered as though it's like a comic routine.
Oh.
And so as he turns to the werewolf, the writer shoots him with all of the bullets and they don't do anything to him. They're real bullets, but they're not silver, apparently. So he throws the gun, he starts running away, he runs back to his office, you know he's going for the fucking
silver pen
award, and he does, he gets into the office, and there's a more unnecessary comedy, dude's full werewolf right now, and jumps on top of the dude's desk, and the writer's sitting on the chair behind the desk, holding the statue, dude says, Wait, I will take the deal and I'll work for, what was the word that he used? I don't remember. He's basically going to work for like almost nothing. But
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
Pro bono?
I forget what they use. It's like a Hollywood term. It starts with an S and it's supposed to mean like very low pay, like intro pay.
Oh.
They have a term for it. But anyway, he says, I'll work for, you know, this small amount. And then the werewolf stops. The werewolf's about to lunge at him. And then the werewolf stops and, like, turns its head to the side. Like, maybe I will take that deal. And then the writer gets greedy and says, plus 30%. And then the werewolf lunges at him and lands on this silver pen award and kills itself.
Yep.
Then we see the biker chick come back in. Writer dude is like, hey, by the way, this dude's dead, so I guess we're good now. Biker chick says, rar, I'm gonna kill you, I'm a werewolf too, and something you should know about werewolves is we travel in packs. And she starts turning into a werewolf, and that's where it ends.
Yeah, it was boring. This whole episode was boring.
Pretty bad. Episode itself, I'm giving a 1. The monster, I'm going to give a 3 when it is in full werewolf form, because it looked pretty good.
Yeah, the monster did look really good. I would give the monster actually a 4, because it was pretty intimidating. But the episode, I'm not even giving it something.
If you guys have seen the movie Bad Moon, it kind of resembled the werewolf in that movie, and that was a pretty decent werewolf.
I think I'm
definitely can tell that it's fake, but still pretty cool looking.
Anyways, I'm giving it a 0 because I really didn't like it.
Okay.
I was so bored the whole time that I just couldn't.
Yeah, and you said this one, like, some people that rated it online rated it pretty high.
Yeah, like, IMDb, a lot of the ones that we have been talking about that we really just didn't like at all have, like, 7s on IMDb, which blows my mind. Like, are we weird? Are we really that weird?
I don't know. It's probably bastards like me that go on and, you know,
this episode is amazing. I remember this from when I was a kid, and I have not watched it since.
I don't know. Yeah. So, throw in some other media at you guys. We got Werewolf the Last Warrior for the Nintendo Entertainment System, released by Data East. This is a platformer video game that's pretty much an action platformer in the style of, like, Mega Man, but you know, it's not giving you level selection or anything. It's just straight from beginning to end, straightforward progression. What I don't like about this one is all of the bosses up until the end are pretty much the same with slight variances to them. What I do like about this is you're playing a fucking werewolf. And that's pretty cool. You actually get to transform into a werewolf by getting power-ups. And you want to stay as a werewolf as much as you can because your human form is pretty much shit. But when you are a werewolf, you don't have, like, paws or, like, humanoid hands. You've got giant Grim Reaper scythes for hands. And that's pretty fucking rad. You're basically going to stop a mad scientist who's going to destroy the world. And you are a top secret agent that's sent by America to do this. And your character's name is werewolf named Warwolf. Warwolf. Warwolf.
Warwolf?
Warwolf.
Like Daddy Warbucks?
Like, you know, World War III. Warwolf.
War.
War.
Wolf.
Warwolf.
Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah, so Warwolf the werewolf goes to save humanity. That's pretty fun. When you beat the game, I'm going to ruin the end for you guys. When you beat the game, there's a pretty nice end cap that you're left with Warwolf standing there with his giant scythe hands in front of an American flag. So, yeah.
All right, so... While you were rambling on about that, I was thinking Taylor Lautner, because he has amazing abs, and for the longest time I felt dirty saying that because he was not 18, but now he is a full adult.
Okay.
And I cannot rightly suggest Twilight to anybody, but that's he plays a werewolf in that. So I'm going to suggest Cuckoo.
Oh, that's a fun one.
It's a comedy, and I don't remember a whole lot about it because it's been a long time since we watched
it. It's a pretty big stretch, but it's an amazing show if you like comedies. It is an amazing show.
Taylor Lautner plays a werewolf in Twilight, but he's also in season 2 of Cuckoo. And yeah. He's a little cuckoo in this.
I feel he's like a that's a show crazy. That anyone can enjoy.
Yeah, this is not horror. This
no,
is
it's just, not.
This is pure it's comedy. It's absurd, though. Yeah. It's great. So I'm going to suggest Cuckoo.
Okay. Yeah, check that out. I think that NES game's pretty fun in a way. It's werewolf difficult for a lot of
werewolf.
Yep, it's difficult for a lot of people to get into werewolf. Because you almost have to watch someone else do some of the parts in the game to get by them because the game is so cheap. It's like structured with the worst gaming development in, well, not the worst, but some of the worst for the Nintendo Entertainment System. You've got these level designs that aren't really open-ended. They're very linear, and they're linear in very strange ways that don't make it obvious to how you're supposed to get by certain obstacles. And that makes it extremely frustrating, especially when you're faced with that kind of roadblock at the very start of the game when you boot it up. You are going into a boss fight, and you're just a dude that has to spend 10 minutes punching a giant in its ass. Like, you gotta... It's ridiculous. You maneuver around this giant man and punch it in the ass until you can turn into a werewolf with scythe hands.
Do you think that... Warwolf the werewolf is easier to say when you are drunk.
Warwolf! Warwolf werewolf. Warwolf the werewolf.
This is starting to sound like a Kimmy Schmidt episode.
So we're gonna let Warwolf you guys go for the night and check us out tomorrow where we're gonna be covering the last 4 episodes of Monsters, saying sayonara to this horror anthology. And yeah, and that'll be it, and we're gonna do our top 5 on Halloween Day. And we've decided that God fuck this Pizza Hut pizza. We've decided that next year we're going to do R.L. Stine's Haunting Hour. That had 79 episodes
right,
in it.
Right, so when we come back closer to Halloween next year, somebody will need to write in and remind us that we were doing R.L. Stine's Haunted Hour.
Yep.
That's another really great show, and I mean, much stronger episodes.
Yeah, we watched a lot of those, and the episodes were consistently good. Yes. I don't remember a bad one.
Yeah, I think it might be hard to pick a top five. Yeah. With that one.
Yeah, that's a great show. That's streaming on Netflix, so
yeah,
check that out.
It'll probably not be streaming by the time we
definitely check out Creamy Cold.
Yes.
That was a great episode.
Yeah, that one was a pretty good one.
Only the bold get the creamy cold.
What was the one called?
That's basically about an evil ice cream truck.
What was the very first one?
That captures children.
What was the very first one? The doll one.
I don't remember what that one was called.
Doll Like Me. I don't know. Yeah. But it's about, like, an oversized doll that is modeled to look just like its owner.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And it wants the owner's life.
Yeah. That one's pretty great. That's
for these, like, children's horror shows, they were more scary than this.
Oh, yeah. Like, they did not always end, for a children's show especially, right. They did not always end with, like, a nice little bow.
Nope.
So that, I mean, it's pretty legit.
Yeah, I think that consistently they were more scary than any of these episodes.
Yeah, these were really, the doll one was legit creepy. Yeah. Like, ooh, yeah.
All right, so gonna let you guys go, and thanks for joining us.
Our favorite show.
Shh, it's starting.
My name is Darian, and I'm an asshole that likes to put pee-pees in my mouth. Darian, and I like the tall man. Fuck you, Darian.